It's time for Radio Vermont's News and Public Affairs program, Open Mic with Hester Fuller. The phone lines to speak with Hester are open, 802-244-1777, toll-free 1-877-291-8255. And now, here's your host, Hester Fuller.
Thanks, John. Good morning, everybody. The Monday before Christmas, you're listening to Open Mic. And we're going to the dogs today. Yep, as I said a while ago, it is my great pleasure to welcome a friend to the airwaves this morning, Ian Grant, who is the proprietor of Vermont Dog B&B, a dog boarding and behavior center up in Hyde Park. And he's here to answer questions and talk to us a bit about your hounds and the holidays. Is that fair, Ian?
Yes, very fair.
Great. I think I need you to come in just a little bit closer so we can hear you better. There we go. That's really, really good. Okie dokie. We do have the Christmas season coming up, and it can be a trying time for animals. What are the things that we should be keeping an eye out for?
Definitely keep away from the counter surfing dogs. There's a lot more treats on the counters these days than regular times, you know, the non-holiday times. Mm-hmm. So obviously the bones, that kind of thing, anything, you know, the turkeys, the goose, that kind of stuff. Anything that's cooked is, you know, the cooked bones is really not good for them. Obviously chocolate, I think everybody's pretty well aware of.
Yeah.
And, you know, the very low-hanging ornaments that might be a little attractive.
That's a good thought.
Is also a good one. So that should really at least kind of get things started.
So ingesting things that they shouldn't ingest can be a peril, and it's something to keep an eye out for. Another thing that happens at the holiday time is we have usually a lot of visitors, and they may not be people that your dog's used to seeing.
Yeah, it's kind of like Halloween time. It's seeing people in costumes is odd, and some people's houses this time of year can be a revolving door of company coming in and out. So we get asked a lot about, you know, how to handle these situations.
What should you do?
We've got a couple of techniques, and the name of it sounds funny, but it works quite well. The first one's called standing on a dog.
Standing on a dog. You can't mean that quite literally.
Not literally, no. But a lot of people don't realize that they can use their leash inside the house. So we'll suggest to people to hook their dog on a leash, and it's actually standing on the leash to really restrict the space that the dog gets to walk around in.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times when you restrict space, dogs kind of realize that they don't have really the ability to move around that much. So standing on the leash, you give them a little bit of slack, but not a lot. And that really tends to settle their brain a little bit.
So if they rush to the door, as you go to answer the door, you can just put your foot on the leash and give them what, like maybe a foot, 2 feet of slack?
That's probably a foot or 2 feet of slack. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can back away from the door and step on it or have somebody else get the door while you do it.
Yeah.
And just stand there. You know, if you ask your company not to acknowledge your dog, if you've got a dog that jumps or barks or might be a little too forward, a technique like this can really go a long ways.
Now, what's happening in the dog's mind as you're doing that?
There's really a lot of stimulation going on. Opening that front door is really to a dog is a portal to a whole new environment with different scents and smells. So when you're putting somebody out there too that they haven't seen for a while, it goes also to the association of what they see those people as. Is could be excitement, could be something fearful, whatever. Mm-hmm. Is kind of the go-to move for the dog. So if it's somebody that they're normally excited to see and jump on, this is a technique that will really, you know, it'll get your dog's attention, and also prevents them from jumping up in the air too.
Which can be better, especially if your guest is bringing little kids or.
And food
to the house. My guest today is Ian Grant from Vermont Dog B&B up in Hyde Park. He is a dog trainer and a wonderful, I must say, a wonderful employer. In the interest of full disclosure, I need to say that I have been doing a temp job up there, filling in for a wonderful person who usually is behind the front desk. And so I just want that out there so everybody understands.
And you've been a welcome addition to
it. Well, that's very kind of you to say. I'm also a longtime customer myself of Ian's. My little dog, Tucker, who's a little Cavalier Spaniel, has been visiting you since way back when. How old is the business at this point?
At this point, I think we officially opened our doors, which was really my house door, December of 2007. So
wow.
We've come a long ways.
Yep. When we were first visiting you in 2007, five or six dogs was a big day, and your office was a lawn chair in your own backyard with an umbrella table?
Yeah, pretty much. We just fenced in our backyard, used our basement for the boarding dogs. Mm-hmm. So, having...
At now
that point,
where are you?
Yeah, at that point, having five or six dogs was a huge day.
Mm-hmm.
So now time during the busy season, we're probably averaging anywhere between 20 to 30 dogs a day.
Wow. And, you know, anyone who's ever been up there, and we should mention that the facility is right off Route 15 up by the VFW in Hyde Park. And
yep.
Anybody who's ever been up there, it's amazing how quiet and cheery and happy it is, even with this mob of dogs. What's the secret to doing that? Why do you think everybody gets along so well?
Well, I think we go through the evaluation process for all dogs that come in for boarding and daycare. So one of my strategies, so to speak, to expect, you know, a certain behavior out of a dog, you know, I couldn't just take Fido off the street and take everybody's word for it that he's the best dog ever. So I had to kind of see for myself. So I had originally created an evaluation process, so to speak, which allowed me to check the dog out, see how it reacted with the other dogs. My dog, Maddie, is a great dog that had always read the new dogs, so that kind of helped me realize, you know, if she's uncomfortable, then I should probably be uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of gave me the feedback. So when they did book for boarding or daycare, then I knew what to expect, knew how to handle it,
mm-hmm.
or it could have been just a happy-go-lucky dog, and it just was going to fit into the pack. So,
mm-hmm. And so now that's been incorporated in your regular business practice, and every dog, I think, needs to.
Yeah, so it just gives us a good heads up to know what to expect. Mm-hmm. I mean, some dogs are a little higher maintenance than others. Not that they're bad. They just have their quirks about them. So it's just our job to make them feel comfortable so they're not threatened in any way, because that's the stuff that starts problems.
We're talking with Ian Grant, who runs Vermont Dog B&B up in Hyde Park. And if you've got questions about dogs, dog behavior, if you have an issue with your own dog and you'd like to ask Ian a question, please give us a call. We're at 244-1777, or you can call us at 877-291-8255. How did you learn to be a dog trainer?
A lot of trial and error. It was actually my wife's dog when we first started dating, her little dog Lula, which she's still with us.
She's still with you.
I remember seeing her, and she was ripping apart pillows and jeans and blankets, and you reach down to pet her, and she would pee everywhere.
Oh, dear.
Wonderful dog. And then really seeing her around like a 2 or 3 year old kid, and she would actually bare her teeth at the young child. So that's a no-go. And crating her it sounded like she was being beaten. So there was a lot of things psychologically that was going on. And originally around that time, I had caught the first episode that I had seen of The Dog Whisperer. So,
Cesar Millan show.
Yeah. So my first thought was, this guy's nuts for doing what he did. But then I realized, you know, just taking your dog out for a walk is a huge part of the dog's world.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And so watching Cesar and watching what Cesar did.
Yeah. And I put a lot of those aspects into play.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the past 8 years, evolving has been really the biggest attribute to my business.
Yeah.
I think if you kind of focus on one style or one theory, you kind of end up closing your mind off to other things that might work for you
mm-hmm.
with different dogs. And that's kind of what I've tried to do myself, is just, that was kind of my go-to theory in the beginning, and it certainly helped create who I am today.
Mm-hmm.
But there's definitely, you know, many other aspects that I've learned that have helped me quite a bit.
Well, we'll return to your philosophy of how to encourage dogs to behave in ways that work in groups. But right now, we got a phone call. Fred from Moncton Ridge, do you have a question for Ian this morning on Open Mic?
I do. I have some friends with the chubbiest, fattest dog you ever saw. And I know it's unhealthy for the animal. He's a beautiful dog. How do you keep the weight down? It's not the animal's fault. It's the people that are feeding it's fault. So how do you keep an animal's weight down? And how do you measure food for a day with animals? And
you know,
I'll get off the air and they listen to you, kind of.
Okay.
Yeah, one of the toughest things that is to convey with people with dogs that are overweight is, you know, normally on the bag of food, there's a guideline on the back that says, you know, for a certain weight, then this is what you feed. However, you know, if your dog is, let's say, supposed to be 30 pounds and it's 50, a lot of owners are still feeding that dog based on 50 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
They're not feeding it based on what their weight should be.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really number one. You know, obviously at that stage, exercise is a good thing. And you really don't want to overdo it with the overweight dogs either. You know, simple walks. And you can keep them short and maybe just do 3 or 4 throughout the day instead of just doing the one long one, which, you know, could really make that guy uncomfortable and lame the next day. Because it's like us. If we don't work out for 2 years and we go out and run a 5K marathon, it might not go over too well the next day.
So watching the amount of food that they get and making sure that it's really keyed toward the dog, the weight you want them to become, and giving them exercise in moderation is really good.
And much like us, it's having the proper dog food, too.
Okay.
So it's, you know, we suggest anything grain-free or even a raw diet would go a long ways, too, with that dog. So it's the overweight dog is just a small aspect. There's other things as far as exercise, what kind of food, and really, you know, what that dog's everyday life is like.
Now, you raised a couple of points that I really would love to get into. Before we get too far off the dog food, how can a person tell whether their dog food is a good dog food or not? You mentioned grain-free, but is there other advice you'd give folks for?
Yeah, we have a website that we always refer people to, and it's called dogfoodadvisor.com. You can go to that website. There's a search box up at the top. You just plug in your food, and they're going to rate that food on a 1 to 5-star scale. And unfortunately, we see a lot of dogs that are on the pedigrees, kibbles and bits, Beneful, which are really not the best of foods for dogs. It's literally like you're giving your dog McDonald's every day.
So these are flavor enhanced.
Yeah, and there's just a lot of ingredients that are not good in it. And this website will break down every ingredient, tell you where it's coming from, tell you what it has in it, and it's pretty eye opening. Mm-hmm. And better foods can also help behavior too.
Yeah, we'll come back to that theme as well. We're talking with Ian Grant, who is the owner and the lead trainer, the only trainer. You've got some wonderful people on your team up there at Vermont Dog B&B up in Hyde Park. And if you've got a question for Ian, give us a call, 244-1777 or 877-291-8255. That is our toll-free number. We were talking a bit about exercise a few moments ago when Fred called us from Moncton Ridge, and we talked about it in terms of dog weight loss. Exercise can serve other functions as well, can it? I mean, it's a good mental workout for your dog, the right kind of exercise.
Yeah, the right kind of exercise. There's definitely the right and the wrong kind. So, you know, the right kind is the walks. We also put dogs on treadmill for added benefits and exercise.
And that is, I can attest to that. Even my little dog learned to walk the treadmill and loved it.
And they do. We get a lot of dogs that'll actually end up walking on the treadmill themselves because they want you to turn it on, which is pretty cool. But it's challenging them mentally on a walk, and it's you know, not doing the same walk every day, going different places. The dogs can get into a rut just like we can if we just take the same walk day in and day out, So there's nothing new for them to smell or explore. So by changing the scenery, it helps them mentally too.
Let's talk a bit about that balance between sort of, I mean, they're out there, they love sniffing around, they love looking at stuff, but at the same time, there's you know, the relationship where you're the one who's going to be in charge. So how does a dog owner strike the right balance between letting the dog have his nose, as it were, and keeping things sort of in a disciplined sort of fashion?
We always say that we're really looking for more structure than freedom. Our advice is, you know, if you're going to take your dog on a 30-minute walk, maybe start out and go 15 minutes, a nice structured walk. Stop in an area, give your dog 5 minutes, just grab the end of the leash and let them explore, maybe let them do their thing, let them sniff around, and then, you know, when the time is up, you kind of rein them back in and then go and finish the walk. So,
What are the benefits the dog gets out of having that structure as well as the free time?
Well, every animal, we're all kind of creatures of habit here, and we all need some structure of some sort. Mm-hmm. So, dogs, their DNA, their instincts are all requiring structure. Animals need structure. It's just the way they survive. So by us providing it, most of the time it takes the weight off of their back, so to speak. I've been in many homes where dogs just, they're really almost literally crying for leadership, and then when you show it, you can see them just kind of relax and realize, I don't have to make these decisions anymore. So it really goes a long ways in your communication with them too.
We're speaking with Ian Grant from Vermont Dog B&B up in Hyde Park. We encourage you to call with your questions, 244-1777, or toll-free, 877-291-8255. Peter from Waitsfield, do you have a question for Ian?
Actually, it's more of something to share. I had posted a post on Front Porch Forum in response to several missing pet posts from other neighbors, and it's actually possible to communicate with your missing dogs. It's undoubtedly stressful when a pet goes missing, but if you're able to calm down and visualize your pet coming to the door, tail wagging in anticipation of its favorite meal and some love in a warm home,
mm-hmm.
you may be pleasantly surprised at how effective it works.
It would be a pleasant surprise.
And you can get real creative, like, you know, visualize from the dog's eye view of a bowl of food with, you know, strips of bacon or whatever treat that, you know. It's amazingly effective. I've taught it to people who were in the midst of a missing pet, and they called back within less than an hour to tell me that they were reunited. So I just thought I'd share that because every pet owner should know this trick.
Well, thank you, Peter. We really appreciate that call. It's an interesting observation and an interesting possibility. Ian, we were talking a moment ago about being able to walk into a household and see that the dog actually craves structure, I think was the phrase that you used. How do you recognize that? If I'm a pet owner at home, how would I know that that's what my dog is needing?
It's looking at things through the big picture, so to speak. So when it comes to behavior, there's a lot of different aspects of the day that your dog looks at. So it could be the feeding ritual, which usually happens twice a day, what that looks like. It could be what it looks like at the front door for your dog when people, guests come in, what the walk looks like, where they sleep, what kind of play time there is. A lot of times there's way more play than structure, which is kind of keeps things out of balance.
And we think our dog is happy, though, because he's like popping all around.
And that's the biggest thing that is hard to convey to a casual dog owner is that just because your dog is playing, that doesn't mean that it's always happy. You know, dogs that are perfectly content or quiet, they're happy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't have to show this boisterous, loud, happy barking, jumping around to communicate with us that they're happy.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we get, as you know, a lot of people that walk into our office that look out and see 20 or 30 dogs just walking around each other. Those dogs are happy,
mm-hmm.
you know, so they don't have to be, you know, make a big production in order to be happy at all.
I guess if I stop and I think about what dogs would be like if there weren't any people around, they would be kind of hanging together and not like tearing around every minute.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have their ups and downs, and mm-hmm. it's going to be an ebb and flow of how, you know, excited they are in their playtime. But yeah, you know, everybody that's kind of seen us, you know, that early afternoon time, the dogs are really, that's kind of the first official rest time
mm-hmm.
where it's been a few hours and it's time that they've created on their own.
Mm-hmm. And they just kind of mellow out.
Yeah.
We're talking with Ian Grant from Vermont Dog B&B up in Hyde Park. If you've got questions for Ian, give us a call at 244-1777 or toll free 877-291-8255. Kevin from South Hero, do you have a question for Ian?
It's Ken, and yes,
oops,
I do.
Sorry, Ken.
I have an Ease who's about 15 to 16 pounds, mm-hmm. and he loves going riding in the car. But every time we get in the car to go, at startup and at shutdown of the car, he gets so excited about whatever it is he's doing. He likes to snap and growl and bark. And what do we do for things like that?
Is he getting into the car on his own, or are you picking him up and putting him in?
He's getting in on his own. Well,
okay.
He's on a leash, of course, but he's getting in on his own.
Okay. Have you guys tried crating him in the car?
We've done that also in the past, but he loves just riding. Like, he'll sit on my wife's lap, or he'll sit on the seat in the back or something. But
mm-hmm. Okay. So
he likes, as long as we're moving, he's fine.
So when you guys come to a stop, is he's growling
yeah.
and barking, is there certain things that he's doing it at, or you guys?
He's doing it at us, yeah. He wants me to get going again.
Oh, and of course you do every time, right?
And of course I do.
That's what we
time.
Do in the car. Yeah. So I think I'd probably, you know, when it gets into the snapping and growling, you're definitely into seeking out a trainer's advice there, because you know, dealing with a dog like that, getting bit is literally right around the corner. So it would really probably come down to some leash work that's going to happen in the back of the car, you know, and I'm not talking like the hard jerks or pops or anything like that, but
something that just kind of restrains him a little?
I think it's the dog is really going through this stimulation, and he's learning that he can control that the car is moving, you know? So every time I bark, the car moves, which that's traffic, that's stop and go. That's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, whether you know it or not, you're kind of fulfilling him every time you do it. And telling him that as long as you do that, I'll do what you're saying.
Mm.
So it's a tough communication, and the car is always tough because you're in a very confined space. So, you know, the other thing you can probably try, have you tried crating with a blanket over the crate?
Yes.
And it still happens?
While he's in the crate, it doesn't seem to be too much. It's when he's loose.
All right, so I would suggest doing the crating thing. A little technique that you can probably try is just kind of throwing 5 or 6 coins in an empty soda can, and when you come to a stop, when you first hear that sound of a growl or a bark, I'd shake the you-know-what out of that can to kind of startle him a little bit. It might give you a second to snap him out of it. So I'd probably suggest that, and I'd probably stage it. So maybe do it out in your driveway or something, or just on the street next to your driveway before you take a trip into Burlington or something.
Yeah. Well, thanks for your call, Kevin. We appreciate that. Ian, I want to mention that we're speaking with Ian Grant from Vermont Dog B&B up in Hyde Park, Vermont, and he has been training dogs and working with dogs for years. And if you've got questions about issues that you're having with your own dog, give us a call here at 244-1777 or 877-291-8255. The sort of thing that we were just talking about, our caller from South Hero, having trouble under a very specific circumstance, you mentioned that the dog would bark as the fellow would stop his car, and then the car would start up again and move along. I have an analogous situation with my dog, which is when the snowplows would go by, he would bark like crazy, and eventually the snowplows would go. And so it reinforced him. He knew that if he barked long enough, the snowplows would go away. How do you begin to confront those sorts of circumstances when you really can't control, you know, the presence of the stimulus?
Yeah, same goes for a mailman, UPS man, FedEx guy, all that kind of stuff, especially this time of year. So I certainly used to look at things as on a specific case-by-case basis where, you know, it could be coming into your home dealing with, you know, the snowplow. But that's one of those scenarios where we really take a look at the big picture of what that dog's life is like. Chances are if he's doing it there, which this is kind of a fine line because part of having a dog is also letting us know there might be somebody outside or there's a car pulling in.
Sure.
Those kind of things. So we just want to be able to have the ability to shut it off, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So we have dogs. I don't mind them barking when there's somebody pulling in because we may not hear it, and they do. That's a part of having a dog.
Mm-hmm.
But it goes back to being able to shut it off, and that's, I think, kind of just probably a little training helps here and there to show you how to handle it. You know, putting your dog on a leash again is one of those things inside the house that not many people think of. They think it's just used for outside. So, like we spoke earlier, the standing on a leash technique is a great
technique
to use.
All of this seems to add up to making it clear that you're in charge and the dog is not in charge. Is that a fair way to?
Yeah, and we want to do it in a healthy way too. Yeah. So we're not going to be Hitler-esque out there with our dogs. You know, it's a give and take. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a part of the relationship and part of having a dog.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Ian Grant from Vermont Dog B&B here on Open Mic, and the number here is 244-1777, or you can call us toll-free at 877-291-8255. Ian from Starksboro, do you have a question for Ian from Hyde Park?
Ian, how's it going?
Good, Ian. How are you?
Very well. I've been doing dog training for a long time.
Nice.
Probably like 25 years and specialized mostly in competition, but I do a lot of pet dogs also, and that one before riding in the car, noisy when the guy moves, is just really easy. Sometimes with dog training, it's just so easy that it's hard for most people. But that would be like someone with a collar, correction collar, sitting in the passenger seat in a quiet command, and the car doesn't start moving until the dog gets quiet. And then when the dog gets quiet, we reinforce the quiet command by driving the car forward.
What would you do in traffic?
No. And when he gets quiet, car can move again. It'd probably take about a week.
It would take a while, wouldn't it?
It'd take about a week. You know, work the dog 3 or 4 times a day for a week, and then the dog would finally learn. It's really not that challenging.
Yeah, and there's no, like you said, there's no quick way to do it that it's going to be almost instantaneous. So it's working with him, like he was saying, a few times throughout the day and doing it for about a week. And, it's good advice.
Now, a week, is that sort of typical? How long does it take for a dog to kind of get your message?
We tell people if they're getting a rescue dog and they bring them into their home, it's the imprint for a dog is about 30 to 45 days. Mm. So it takes about that long for the dog to fully realize, okay, this is where I live, this is the routine, this is the structure, this is what they do with me, this is what my life is like. So
And that's in terms of the big picture for the dog.
That's the big picture, right. Absolutely. So, we hear many people after the 2 or 3 day time frame where everything's great and they're still on the honeymoon, so to speak, honeymoon phase. So about 3 weeks, things start to usually kick in, whether good or bad. But that should at least start to show you what's kind of where you're headed.
Okay. We are speaking with Ian Grant from Vermont Dog B&B. We're talking about dogs and your relationship with your dog. And we look forward to talking more right after these words. You're listening to Open Mic. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Mic on WDEV. Hester Fuller is my name, and my guest today is Ian Grant from Vermont Dog B&B up in Hyde Park. We're talking about dogs and your relationship with your dogs, and Ian's also addressing your questions about your dog and why he or she does the things she does and how you can influence that dog's behavior. Barbara from South Burlington, I hear you're on the line. Do you have a question for Ian?
Oh, hi, yes. I'm going to pose it in two parts.
Okay.
Because I want to ask specifically about a specific breed of dogs. First of all, when he takes his dogs into his dog B&B, are there certain breeds to look out for? And then I'm going to separate that, saying, okay, I'm calling about, it's not my dog, it's my daughter's dog, which is a Doberman. Now, this would be the second Doberman that she had. The first one died of a heart attack at the age of 4. And so she got an adopted 1-year-old Doberman, which she's had for 5 months now. Generally speaking, I love dogs, almost all dogs. But this one is a pain in the neck. It just seems he just never seems to be under control. He comes into your house, it's all over the place, uncontrollable, just into the garbage, into bags, just never seems to be under control. Jumps all over people, and just a nuisance. So I want to specifically zero in on that breed and anything, further you can add to all these comments.
Okay, Barbara, thank you very much. Ian, what do you say to Barbara? She's got a problem on her.
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
There.
Probably the first thing is when we have a dog come to our place, I really don't focus on the breed to start with. I really want to focus on the brain and the dog that's in front of me. Of course, every dog's going to have their instincts, or every breed is, but to me, I just want to know what kind of brain am I working with. So that's kind of the answer to the first part. Here, the second part is this dog, I think she said, is about 1 year old.
A year and 5 months, it sounds like.
Yeah, so this dog is still kind of a puppy. And doing this kind of stuff, I have this picture in my head of this dog just running around the house and like the rocket ship and just getting into everything and around everyone. The dog just sounds way overstimulated to me. And one of the, the signs that you can look at is actually to see if the dog's pupils are dilated, much like if we get our eyes tested at the eye doctor. We get a lot of puppies that come in that are way overstimulated. They don't get enough downtime where their brain actually gets a chance to just relax and refresh and sleep and rest and do what they need to do. So that would kind of be my first question, is to see if the dog is crate trained. So it has a safe place to go as well. The second part of it, like we were talking about the big picture, it doesn't sound like the dog has a lot of rules and boundaries to live by. And that goes back to the structure that we mentioned earlier. So, I think there's a lot of overstimulation, and that can be perceived as a high energy dog, which most cases it isn't. It's just a dog that's just so overstimulated. It's almost buzzing all the time. And dogs can run on adrenaline. And this dog it sounds like he's clearly adrenalized. And that can be difficult to work with. I would definitely, have them seek out a trainer for some help.
Okay, so a couple of good pieces of advice there. One, creating a situation where the dog can have some downtime, because dogs need downtime perhaps more than we realize.
Yes, definitely.
And if it's a dog that's really kind of beyond your own capacities to work with, then find a professional to help you teach these kinds of things. Thank you for that question, Barbara. We really appreciate it. We have another caller on the line. Bill from Johnson, do you have a question for Ian?
Yeah, I should warn you, there's a shameless plug coming. I'm Nevaeh's dad. Ian knows who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to tell you this, my brother recommended this place, and it's fantastic. But for people with challenging animals, there's been a lot of great questions, but ultimately what ends up happening, if you take a class with Ian, for instance, that I'm taking right now with my dog,
mm-hmm.
it's not training a dog, it's training you.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be difficult. So prepare yourself for a real education and be prepared to change kind of your preconceived notions, because that's what I'm going through.
Okay.
I'd like Ian to talk more about training the trainer.
Training the trainer? Training the owner?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Okay. That's a good question. Thanks, Bill. What about that? Is your job really about training the owners as opposed to the dogs?
Yeah, it is. And it may not... we may not look at it as training the owners, and for anybody that's ever been to our place, the back of our shirt on the top says educator.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where I feel that's more of our job, is to just educate the owners what their dog is going through.
Mm-hmm.
So even if somebody comes in for an evaluation, we just want to tell them about their dog and help them learn about their dog and to make that relationship better.
Mm-hmm.
So, in some cases it can be very difficult for the owner to hear, because it's, who else is really going to speak up for the dogs,
right,
other than the people that study this and do this full time every day? So, it could be about food. It could be about behavior. It could be about what you're letting your dog do that's not so good, those kind of things. So, at the end of the day, it's tough for some people to go through. And just like any other business, there's always research and development going on about dogs, and we're always trying to educate ourselves. So, dog training of the past, there's still the place for it, but we're always trying to learn ourselves too, so that helps us just pass on the knowledge to our customers.
My guest is Ian Grant, who owns and runs Vermont Dog B&B up in High Park with a fabulous team of trainers and dog care attendants. And if you have questions for Ian about your dog or about dogs in general and dog behavior or owner behavior, give us a call at 244-1777 or toll free 877-291-8255. Ian, a lot of folks are going to be finding a puppy in their stocking this Christmas.
I hope not.
I know. Every year we hear these cautions against giving animals or pets for Christmas of any species. Do you have advice for folks who find themselves with a new four-legged friend Christmas morning?
I almost don't wish that on anybody.
I know.
There's nothing like putting a bow on a puppy and saying, here's your 12-year commitment.
Yeah.
So, in the beginning, just get the dog out, get him walked, get a crate, just get him as much structure as possible.
Mm.
Like I said, puppies are way overstimulated, so give them some structure. Just give them, probably more structure in the beginning than just loving and petting and that kind of thing. So, I know we've said this a couple of times, but winter's difficult time to get any dog. Not so much right now because there's hardly any snow outside, but it's going to hit. It's inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just hard to get out with your dog this time of year. So, finding some daycare in your area would probably be a good idea. Get your dog socialized. Get them, if you've got friends with dogs, get them around that dog. It'll might save you a lot of time and pain later on.
Mm-hmm. Now, what if you're unfamiliar with dogs or new puppies? Is there a resource that people can consult for basic training, basically?
We've got our puppy class starting in January, we're really looking forward to. We've been doing a few of these training classes, and they're just getting busier and busier. So mm-hmm. it's going over quite well.
And what kind of things do you do in a puppy class?
It's funny. So the name of it is Complicated Canines, and we always get asked about the complicated part. And it's really just a dog that's unable to make its own decision, mm-hmm. For the better. So we go through a traditional 6-week time period, and that goes back to that 30 to 45 days of imprint period.
Sure, yeah.
So there is a strategy to our madness.
Mm-hmm.
We do an hour each night. So for people that like to learn on that kind of scale, it's quite easy.
And we should stress that it's once a week. It's not every night for 42 days.
Right, yes.
Once a week.
That'd be a little much. Yeah. And we just go over some basic handling in the beginning. We do the sitting on the dog drill, sitting on the leash.
Mm-hmm.
And we just go over a lot of leash techniques. We get your dog conditioned to a few different tools. And our training is a little bit different than the normal basic obedience kind of training.
In what way?
We don't use food that often. 99 times out of 100, when you take a treat out and you show it to the dog, the dog's not looking at you, they're looking at the treat.
Mm-hmm.
So our communication with the dog during these classes is that we want the dog to focus on us and not the treat or the ball or whatever motivation your dog is mm-hmm. really trying to get to. So, we've had a couple of dogs that have come through the class where you can definitely tell there's some obedience training that's happened or some training to heel next to you just by how the dog reacts.
Mm-hmm.
For somebody that's gone through that kind of training and then they go through hours, we get a lot of confused looks to start with. But it has really come a long ways for people to understand that we're truly working with their brain first before the breed and just trying to communicate with our dog better.
We're talking with Ian Grant from Vermont Dog B&B up in Hyde Park, Vermont. And if you have a question for Ian, give us a call at 244-1777 or 877-291-8255. That is our toll-free number. Now, Ian, what about the dog who is sort of too much of a challenge for his or her owner right out of the chute? Is there anything that they can do?
If that dog is too much, then you need help immediately because it's not going to get better on its own. We get a lot of people that get a dog that might be 2 years old. They're not really an adult until they're three.
Mm.
So they think certain behaviors are just going to go away. Some may and some may not. So, and that's where Bill's call earlier, it comes back to training the owners and truly letting them know what their dog is going through. So, a difficult dog, we work with a lot of them, so... we can certainly, just during an initial evaluation, tell you what you've got going on and telling you really how we can help. So, and it's not one of those cases where, we can take the dog and for a certain amount of time and fix it and hand it back to you and everything's going to be rainbows and butterflies after that. So, there's always work for the owner to do afterwards, but we're always there to help them and support them through it.
Now, I know there's a range of services at Vermont Dog B&B, including several days, a week, a couple of weeks, the dog can come and stay and learn, kind of begin this 45-day imprinting process. And then what is the owner, what kind of resources are there for the owner when they bring the dog home again?
So we have our board and train services, which are, 4 days, 7 days, 2 weeks, or 3 weeks. And it really, the time frame depends on how severe the behaviors are. So, if somebody just wants leash work or something easy, it could be 4 days. But for the dogs that have some all-out major problems, we do the 3 weeks. From there, it's really putting the owners on a program to follow.
Mm-hmm.
And we have guidelines that are written out. We have, a leadership packet, crate training, feeding and nutrition, what their day looks like. We break down their day from, and we sit down and write it down with them. What time do you let your dog out in the morning? What time do you feed them? These are the structured activities that we need you to do with them. And we need you to do it 3 or 4 times a day, throughout this 30-day time period that we want you to follow. So it kind of takes the world of the dog and turns it upside down, which if they're having problems, it's probably a nice break for you. So you don't have to deal with those problems anymore. You're dealing with this more on a proactive basis.
Mm-hmm.
So we have people, normally follow this program for about 30 days. We meet up with them 2 weeks after. And then at the 30-day time frame. So, it's nice to see people's faces when, their dog is seeing a tennis ball and the dog is just vibrating. It wants the tennis ball so bad to, okay, now we can put 30 tennis balls in front of the dog while it's sitting on a bed and it's not moving and not even interested in the tennis ball. So
while it's on the bed.
On the bed. Mm-hmm. So it's fun to see the dogs progress. It's fun to see the owners realize that there is hope.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of stuff that gets us up in the morning.
We're talking with Ian Grant, who runs Vermont Dog B&B up in Hyde Park, Vermont. If you have a question for Ian, give us a call at 244-1777 or 877-291-8255. And we'll be back with more after these. You're listening to Open Mic. Good morning and welcome back to Open Mic here on WDEV. Hester Fuller is my name, and I'm here every Monday from 9 until 11. Coming up at 11 o'clock this morning, of course, Common Sense Radio with Bill Sayers. We hope you'll stay tuned for that. Right now, though, we're talking with Ian Grant from Vermont Dog B&B up in Hyde Park, and the subject is dogs, dog behavior, your relationship with your dog. Give us a call if you have a question for Ian, 244-1777 or 877-291-8255 is our toll-free number. We'd love to hear from you. Ian, we were talking a while ago about how you began working with dogs, and you told us the story about Lula and your own dog, and you've also mentioned your dog, Maddie, who's kind of like your bellwether dog, I guess, to help,
yes,
in the very beginning of the time when you ran your business out of your own basement. And you mentioned also that you were motivated in part by watching Cesar Millan and The Dog Whisperer. But I also know that you have developed a sort of a bigger and broader sense of the kinds of things that go into dog training. Can you kind of, in a way, summarize some of the thoughts you have about the nature of a dog and how that underlies your approach to training?
Yeah, you know, we really want to follow their instincts as much as possible. You know, my classroom was watching the dogs that came over for daycare for years, and seeing how they interact with each other. And, you know, in the beginning, it's pretty clear to see that dogs don't give affection to each other all day, every day, and say, good dog, good sit, you know, lay down, go over there and sit, go get in your place. So, and every trainer is different. This is just kind of, you know, my way that I feel like works for us. And it really has developed into a way to connect more with the dogs. Mm. So, you know, the early philosophies that I saw with Caesar, and I studied and I grabbed as many books as I could, because they're really, you know, it's not like you can just go take a class on opening up a daycare and seeing how it works. So we've really worked into what we call a pressure and release technique.
Does that mean?
Well, it's really how to put pressure on a dog through a leash, kind of creating tension with a leash and really waiting until what you want to get out of the dog. So dogs can really only do one thing at a time. And if you can really focus on that, it kind of gives you an in, so to speak, to their brain. So, you know, the dogs that might be, you know, lunging at people or barking at other dogs from a distance, you know, ideally we want to give them something else to think about rather than that. You know, it's hard for them to focus on the handler and the dog that they're barking at or lunging at, something like that. So, you know, from there, we do a lot of training with a head halter, which will look like a gentle leader to many people.
And that's in lieu of a collar, it looks like a halter over their face.
Correct. And it is not a muzzle.
No.
A lot of people think that it is. You know, dogs can still pant and drink and eat if they really need to, and yawn, which that's the kind of stuff that we enjoy seeing. And we get asked a lot why we use that instead of a flat collar. And the reason is this. I've never seen anybody walk a horse by the saddle and be, you know, successful with it. You know, they're walking this, you know, 1,500-pound animal by holding onto their head, the head halter that fits on a horse. So, you know, and it's not about out-muscling the dog. So this pressure and release technique helps us get control of their brain, which really then, you know, allows us to not try to overpower or be overly physical with the dog. We're just working their brain instead.
So it's getting their attention in a way that they cannot ignore. And then you mentioned another key word in there, which is waiting for the dog to do the thing you want it to do. That must be a hard one to get across to folks.
And it can be, because, again, we're working with the brain. So, you know, we have to let the brain run its gamut, so to speak, of different choices that the dog's going to make. So by waiting and kind of weathering the storm, so to speak, and just kind of with the techniques that we use, yeah, sometimes it takes us 20 minutes to work with a dog and finally realize that we're actually connecting with the dog. You know, a lot of those other behaviors might fade away. If the owner's not around, that's a biggie too. So, you know, after that 20 or 30 minutes, you can really tire out a dog in that time frame possibly more than taking that dog for a 5-mile run.
Huh.
So it's pretty interesting, and it's quite enjoyable.
So giving the dog something to think about besides the wacky behavior, and then having the patience to sort of sit and wait for the connection to be made, and it really can take 20 minutes. This sounds like, this is, to me, as someone who's, I've owned one dog in my life, and you know him, and he's kind of a good little dog anyway, so he doesn't really raise a whole
pretty
pile.
Easygoing.
Pretty easygoing. Not too many issues. But I would imagine this is a great relief for folks who are new dog owners to understand that, you know, the things they're experiencing aren't necessarily reflections that they are in some way deficient, merely that they're in a new place with a new kind of a critter, with a new kind of psychology, and it's just about learning how that dog thinks.
Yeah, like, you know, one of the things I tell people is you don't know what 2+2 is until somebody teaches you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really that simple. And, you know, a lot of dog owners will compare their dog that they have now to the one they have previously.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't say it right out loud, but it's not the same dog.
Right.
You know,
right.
So this guy's going to teach you something different.
Yeah.
You're going to do different things. You're going to understand them differently. And that'll help you to maybe better the relationship for your next dog that you get.
That makes sense.
So it's kind of a stepping process.
I'd like to talk a little bit about dog adoption and dog rescue. I know you've been very active with Justice for Dogs in this area. Does a rescue dog present special challenges to a new owner?
It can, you know. A lot of dog owners fixate on wanting to know or assuming what that dog's previous life experience was. Somebody might come into our place and say, well, we think he was beaten. And, you know, we're not sure where he came from or what he's been through. And my response is usually, well, he doesn't know what you've been through either.
Mm.
And he doesn't sit and fixate on it either. He's only thinking about the now.
Uh-huh.
So let's treat him in the now, and let's not all feel sorry for him that he might have been beaten. I mean, it's terrible. We don't want anything like that to ever happen. But let's not worry about it, and let's just kind of think about what's the best thing we can do for him now. Let's figure out what's going to make him comfortable, and let's move on from there.
Okay, so your dog is living in the now. We need to treat and train him in the now, or educate him in the now.
Yeah.
You know, this is wonderful and interesting, and I wonder, would you mind hanging around a little bit? We have to take a news break at the top of the hour, but we have some other folks that are lined up to talk to you.
Sure, I would love to.
Great. We're talking with Ian Grant from Vermont Dog B&B up in Hyde Park, and we'll be taking your questions in just a few minutes. The phone number's here if you want to write it down and call us while we stop for some commercials and a little bit of news. 244-1777. Our toll-free number here is 877-291-8255, and we will be back with news right after this break. Good morning. You're listening to WDEV. Hester Fuller is my name. We're on Open Mic. In just a little minute, we're going to be heading down to D.C. to talk to our friends from Talk Media News. I want to take a moment, though, to plug Common Sense Radio, which comes up every weekday morning at 11 o'clock at the end of Open Mic. This week, Bill Sayre's guests, quite a wonderful lineup. Today, the question they're asking, the question they're exploring, why does innovation, invention, and technological advance seem to occur more rapidly in societies where people are free and government is limited? One of Vermont's most successful entrepreneurs, Rich Tarrant, and Bill Sayre will talk about that question today, giving examples from medicine and education, communication and energy, all that coming up on Common Sense Radio from the Ethan Allen Institute with Bill Sayre right here on WDEV today at 11 o'clock. Right now, though, we're going to head down to D.C. Victoria Jones from Talk Media News is with us. Good morning, Victoria.
Good morning.
Are you still down there in the basement of the White House? I have this image of you now. Oh, you're not. Good.
Not today.
They let you out. I'm so glad.
Because when the president is out of town, we don't necessarily go in quite as much.
That's
And I'm not very well today. So Senator Lindsey Graham has ended his bid for the presidency today.
Uh-huh.
So that's
the big news.
A big piece of news. Yes, that's a big piece of news. But he says he wants to still be a voice, obviously, and he was a serious candidate in the sense that he had serious proposals,
mm-hmm.
but he could not get any traction.
Mm-hmm.
for his campaign.
Yeah, it's, I wonder how much traction he'll be able to get on the discussion if he's not actually a candidate with a voting bloc following him.
I don't think he'll be able to get very much traction. Not in this Republican campaign where it's all about bluster. So I don't think he will be able to right now.
Any noise on the street about the Saturday evening discussion in New Hampshire, the debate?
Most certainly there is. There's a strong sense that that Hillary Clinton acquitted herself very well. And again, the questions are being asked. As she is such a skilled debater, why would the Democratic National Committee want to keep these debates so well hidden on Saturday night, like the last Saturday shopping day before Christmas?
That is certainly a good question. The controversy with Senator Sanders seems to have been neutralized by her, by his apology to her and her accepting that apology. Is that...
Yes, I think so. He's also fired two more staffers subsequent to that, and he's calling for an independent investigation, which she also endorsed. And she said she wanted to move on, and she also said that she didn't think that the American people were particularly interested in it. And I think that's true. I think, you know, people like us, we're interested in something like this, but I think the majority of non-political junkies don't really get what it's about, but it's intriguing to us. I think he has to a great extent neutralized it, and so now it just comes back to bare knuckles politics as to who did better in the debate, whether either one of them gained any more supporters from the debate, whether it made any difference to their campaigns or not.
Well, the wheels grind on, and the days of decision draw ever closer. Victoria Jones in Washington, D.C., thank you very much for giving us a call on this morning. We look forward to talking with you again. You are tuned to WDEV in Waterbury, Vermont. My name is Hester Fuller, and I'll be back right after these with Open Mic. Good morning and welcome back. This is Open Mic. Hester Fuller is my name. I'm here every Monday from 9 until 11. And coming up tomorrow, of course, we will have Mike Smith, my esteemed colleague, will be returning to his usual spot. He'll be here Tuesday through Friday. Well, actually, I don't know if you... with me right now, someone who can help me get straight about what's happening this week is my esteemed associate producer, Tom McLeod. How are you, Tom?
Good morning.
Missed you last week.
Yeah, well, thank you. I heard you Friday. It sounded like a good show.
It was fun. We had a good time. Our organizer friend, Deb Fleischman, was in from Montpelier. So what's the story later this week? Mike will be on every day, or are we going to be taking Christmas off?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure what the station is doing. I assume holiday programming for Friday, but Mike and I won't be there then, but we will be here Thursday, so right up Tuesday through Thursday, open mic. I haven't seen his guest lineup yet.
No, I haven't either, and I was going to ask you if you'd seen it yet, but I won't put you on the spot.
Maybe he should have listened Friday to listen to that organizer.
Hey, maybe he's listening now.
I'm in trouble. Yeah.
Oh, Mike's pretty organized fella. I'm not worried that
he
will come through here.
Very organized.
Yeah. We also want to mention again that coming up at 11 o'clock this morning, Bill Sayre will be in with Common Sense Radio, as he is every Monday through Friday at 11 o'clock, brought to you by the Ethan Allen Institute. And today the topic is invention, innovation, and technological advance, and why they seem to flourish more in societies where people are free and government is limited. Bill Sayers with his guest today, Rich Tarrant, coming up on Common Sense Radio at 11 o'clock here on WDEV. Right now, though, it is my great pleasure to have as my guest this morning Ian Grant from Vermont Dog B&B up in Hyde Park. We had quite a lively time between 9 and 10, and so I've asked Ian if he would mind hanging out a little bit longer. If you have calls, we know we had a number of calls that were sort of backed up as we went into the top of the hour. If you were one of the folks who wasn't able to get your question in during the 9 o'clock hour, Ian's still here, and we're happy to hear from you. 244-1777, or call us toll-free at 877-291-8255. We've been talking about the holiday season and the particular challenges that it brings for dogs and for their owners. And I wanted to talk a little bit about special challenges. Oh, Dick from St. Albans is already back.
Beautiful.
We'll have to hold that thought and come back. Dick from St. Albans, you have a question for Ian?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. What's your question?
Yeah, I want to go into the sound effects. Instead of beating your dog into compliance and make its a brain basically accept pain, My parents had a dog that was very, very hyper when a snowplow went by and when the UPS truck went by. Now, the UPS truck has a distinct sound. Now, I never paid too much attention to that, but I often watch the reaction of the dog, and you might want to be watching the reaction of your dogs when certain things happen.
Mm-hmm.
The turbochargers in a diesel truck, there's a whistling sound that most humans don't hear. And the UPS truck has a kind of a, I don't know, it's a distinct sound. I don't know if I ever really could put a name on it. But it stands out, and, you know, going by, a human can hear it, but it really doesn't affect them. But that sound and the sound, and I could never figure out on the snowplow if it was the scraping of the plow on the road or maybe it was the effect from the, you know, turbochargers and the diesel motors that were affecting the dog's hearing. But there was a problem, and it was affecting that dog. And that dog would respond immediately every time those two vehicles went by. So you might want to do a little more thought process into sound effects and how it affects an animal's brain, because the dog can hear much better than you can. And instead of trying to train the dog's brain to accept this pain, find out what's causing it.
Ian, what do you think? That sounds like common sense to me.
Yeah, and it's funny, before I answer that question, about 3 weeks ago I heard that on one of the Beatles songs, Paul McCartney put some sort of a sound that only dogs can hear in one
oh,
of their
really?
Songs. So I'm not sure which one it was, but I found that quite interesting. You know, as far as dogs responding to those noises, I don't know if I would clarify it as being pain. A lot of times dogs get into the fight or flight scenario. Mm-hmm. You know, they're either hating that noise and they want to get to it to stop it, or they want to get away from it. So, you know, the big part of this is how the owners respond to it. You know, for a dog that gets scared of something and they tuck their tail and they want to run, a lot of people will use that human psychology kind of crying baby syndrome where, okay, if I just coddle this and tell the dog that everything's going to be okay, then I can take care of it.
Mm.
So again, you know, like we mentioned before, dogs live in the present. So when we actually take a dog that's, you know, shivering or scared or nervous and we're petting them and we're telling them it's okay, we are literally telling them it's okay to be in this state of mind. And we can actually nurture that to the point where it can become very unhealthy, and they get to experience that more and more and more, and then you have created a dog that ends up being scared or nervous about most stimuli. So, yeah, it could be the UPS truck that starts it, and then the snowplow that goes by, and that accelerates the process, and then the UPS truck, and then a semi. So it's really, you know, like I said, dogs get in that fight or flight. To me, I think it's important that we take those moments, we call those teachable moments, where we want to work with a dog right then and there, because it's one of those things that maybe we can't replicate again easily. So, you know, if the dog is on leash at that point, I would just stand there with the dog. And again, something as simple as the standing on the dog technique, the standing on the leash,
on the lead, we should be.
And, you know, not allowing that dog to use that flight mechanism in their brain, will, you know, at least let them realize that, hey, if you just hang out here with me for a little while, that truck or that sound will go away. But it's not going to go away because you're making it go away.
So, I mean, dogs living in the now is something that's a little different between humans and dogs, and as you mentioned, that humans also bring their own psychologies into this relationship and perhaps make assumptions about what the dog is going through. Are there other ways in which we maybe don't recognize the differences between our psychology and dogs besides the living in the now?
You know, our psychology is we're always thinking about yesterday and what we're going to do tomorrow. So working one-on-one with your dog kind of brings you into the now, which is really cool. And it's good practice for us too. So yeah, they're in the now, and it's important to always remember that. You hear many stories of people that come home and their dog has gotten in the trash, and everybody says, my dog knew that it did wrong because, you know, the trash was everywhere when I got home. I don't know many people that are happy when they come home to that scene. And their energy immediately changes. Everything, how they carry themselves, what they're saying out loud or not out loud, You know, you got to pick up garbage. You're frustrated. You're angry. That's what your dog is responding to, not the fact that there's, you know, a garbage bag full of garbage behind him all
so
over.
So in other
the
words, he's not connecting your reaction to the to what you see as a mess that he probably caused.
Yeah, not in my experience. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to, you know, they're reading our body language every minute of the day. And there's really no escaping that. Mm-hmm. So they're living in that present moment all the time. You know, when you normally come in at the end of the day after a long day of work and you're happy to see your dog and your dog's happy to see you, everything changes when there's garbage on the floor and you don't have that same happy energy to see your dog. So they know something's up.
But they're not sure what it is.
It's, you know, we have about maybe 5 seconds to address something that we see our dog do.
Okay.
If we don't do it in that time frame, it's you're at a loss.
So what you're saying here is that reacting to the trash on the floor when you get home isn't going to have any effect on the dog's.
No. I mean, and you could say, you know, you could still greet your dog as happy as can be and still do the normal greeting, and your dog's not going to attribute it to, okay, I get this good greeting if there's trash all over the floor. You know, it doesn't work that way either.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's staying in the present with your dog. And that's when things really get messed up, is because when people do try to discipline their dog for garbage that's been sitting out for an hour and your dog has no idea, now you're really confusing your dog and you're doing a lot of damage mentally to that dog because they don't understand why you're so upset.
So what is the proper response? If you come home, you find trash on the floor, you have no idea whether it just happened or it happened an hour ago, what do you do?
Put a smile on your face, get a garbage bag, clean it up, and put it away, you know, and make sure that the next time that you leave that there's no access to it.
Okay, so prevention.
Yeah.
Keeping the
dog. Yes, absolutely.
Okay, and not necessarily expecting the dog to make the same connections mentally that you're,
correct,
that you're making or drawing,
right,
drawing
right,
the same conclusions. In addition to that kind of acknowledgement of the difference between the way dogs look at things and the way we see things, are there other suggestions you would have for just how people can get the relationship off on a good foot with their dogs?
It goes back to the structure piece, making sure that there's the right structure. And it's really finding that balance of giving them what they need. You know, we don't get a dog to hook it to a doghouse and have it outside, you know, 7 days a week. That's that's not the purpose. So it's really, you know, integrating them into your life, you know, it's making sure they revolve around you and you don't revolve around them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the greatest things about Vermont is that there's a lot of people that drive around with their dogs in their cars, and it's pretty cool to see. I've been to some other states where you don't see it nearly as much as we do here. And from a trainer's perspective, it's pretty cool because those dogs are getting exposed to a lot of different things rather than being home. Or just being alone at home and not getting out and around. So, you know, that's the social aspect of having a dog.
Yeah, dogs are social creatures, aren't they?
Yes, they are, without a doubt.
What can we do to encourage that in dogs? That they can, say you have only a dog and you don't have other dogs, and maybe you have a work schedule that doesn't give you the time to be able to, you know, take your dog out around the neighborhood or meet other dogs in the neighborhood. Is there anything we can do to kind of help the dog experience that social dimension that's so important to them?
Yeah, so, you know, between spring and end of fall, basically, we have what are called socials, which we run every Saturday. We do big dogs at 11, little dogs at 1, and they run for about a half an hour. So the hardest part to convey what a social is basically a controlled dog park.
Uh-huh.
A dog park to your everyday trainer makes us cringe.
What is that? Why?
Well, 9 times out of 10, there's an owner with a cell phone on and their dog's running around and could be causing all sorts of problems. So, you know, they're really taking their dog there for the dog to just run around like a rocket ship and can cause a lot of problems. And I've seen a number of dog parks where I just don't want to go in. The behavior, the energy level, it's way too excited. Things can go sideways really quickly in a dog park unless you get a good group of people that you're friendly with and a good group of dogs, and you kind of have your own clique, so to speak.
And they all know each other.
And they know each other, and the dogs are great. And you know, in that aspect, they're very good.
So are they sorting out in a new situation? Are they sorting out kind of social status and rank with new dogs?
They are. And I've always disliked the saying, "We'll let them figure it out." Because that's the stuff that can really lead to some bad behaviors and then, you know, vet bills or trainer bills or something along those lines. So
even injury.
Yeah. So we run these socials. And as far as painting a picture, so we do this in an outside fenced in setting. Everybody walks in with their dogs on leash and spread apart just enough so dogs can't get to each other. There's probably anywhere from 2 to 4 of us, handlers, trainers, so to speak. We give our little spiel that nobody is, when we say the word go, everybody unclip their dogs. And the rules are you can't touch or talk to any of the dogs within the space, including your own. Mm. So this is a chance for you to be in this element, let your dog be a dog. At that time, you unhook them. They're our responsibility. Mm-hmm. And this is what we do. So we feel like we're pretty good at it. and we just have everybody walk in the same direction, kind of do laps within this fenced-in area. And movement is really the key of this. There was a great trainer, Dick Russell, that actually created this, kind of brought it to the North America area. And he used to do this in very large fields that were probably 3 or 4 acres.
Really?
I can't imagine what that was like, but it was... Just the thought of it seems pretty
cool. So it's just a
cool.
great stream of people and dogs all moving together around in a...
And that movement is what creates the dogs to move. It doesn't allow them to linger or to focus on someone or another dog too long, and that's kind of where we step in, where if we see, you know, one dog being too forward than another, we get to step in and kind of break it up. You know, for the dogs that are a little nervous or scared of people, this is a fantastic technique. For this dog to be around people and realize nobody's going to put pressure on him to be petted. And it may take a little while, and every dog, you know, learns at a different pace, just like we do. So it's fantastic to see it happen. It's really cool to see how it works. We don't allow any playing. So
what do you mean you don't allow playing?
Well, we don't want that intensity to build up. So we're just looking for dogs to have positive interactions and keep it short and sweet. And that's really what we build on from there. We do this every Saturday, and we offer this as a free service to people that have gone through our evaluations. And we see people come back over and over and over again for these because they enjoy it so much.
It sounds like it'd be a lot of fun. So when the weather is good, that's something else that happens up in Hyde Park. It's a lot of fun. We're talking with Ian Grant from Vermont Dog B&B, and we're still open to your calls, 244-1777 or toll-free 877-291-8255. And we'll be back after these on Open Mic. Welcome back. You are listening to WDEV and the Open Mic program. Hester Fuller's my name. I'm with you every Monday morning between 9 and 11. And my guest this morning is Ian Grant from Vermont Dog B&B up at Hyde Park, taking your calls and your questions. And Ray from Barrie, you're on the air with Ian.
Oh, yeah. Nice program. My son has a golden doodle, approximately a year old. Beautiful dog, loves to dig in the yard. He just loves to dig in the yard, and they can't seem to stop it.
So I think, you know, digging can be a couple different reasons. Obviously, the first is scent, that they're really actually trying to get at something. And the other can actually lead into frustration. So, you know, the age of the dog was kind of the red flag to me here when you said digging. I think we look at the general day of what that dog goes through. So as far as what kind of stimulation he gets, so is there any mental stimulation? Is he going for regular walks? Is he getting downtime? So I think those are the things to look at. Do you know if he's getting walked that much?
He gets walked every day, mile or two or three. Stimulation has downtime, has its own crate. She goes in and out of the crate, is fed twice a day, 2 children, so quite a bit of positive stimuli.
Okay. I think in that case, I would probably just walk right out to where he's digging, you know, while he's digging, and I would have probably a technique of either standing over the hole or getting in between him and the hole. And that's when I would ask, you know, that they make some sort of correction sound, whatever it is that they make, whether it's, you know, a word or a sound, something along those lines. So the dog knows, and we're kind of making the dog understand that we don't allow that. Once you get what you need out of the dog as far as his behavior, he knows that he's connected more with the owner there than the hole. That's when I would just walk away without saying anything. And as soon as he starts to go back to the hole, I would make that same sound again, the correction sound. So we're kind of making that area ours, so to speak, and we want the dog to understand that. So whether you walk away 5 feet or 10 feet, obviously you just want to be within that realm of being able to get back to him before he gets back to the hole. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Good.
Thanks very much, Ray, for your call. It's very, very interesting. We're listening. You are listening to Open Mic on WDEV, and my guest this morning is Ian Grant from Vermont Dog B&B up in Hyde Park. We're looking for your calls, 244-1777 or 877-291-8255 is the toll-free number. Ian, a lot of folks bring a dog into a household where there are already other pets living. Any tips or advice for folks who are introducing a new dog to the household where there are other animals?
It's funny. I'm doing that this week, actually.
Really?
For my sister-in-law, and her sister is coming over. So I'm going to go over and kind of get everybody intertwined, so to say. As far as a home that just has one dog and then they're bringing in another, the overall big picture, sometimes that actually helps, that
really?
One dog, because now there's a friend around, and they can fulfill each other a lot better than we can fulfill a dog. I mean, they're the same species. So ideally, to me, for those dogs to meet and have it go well, I think I would do it on neutral territory to start with.
Now, what would be neutral territory?
I mean, even if it's out in the street or out on the sidewalk,
okay.
Just nothing inside the house to start with.
Because that's the first dog's turf.
Yeah. And it can be perceived that way as well. This is my territory, and you're coming in, so you're going to live by my rules. That can be the communication. So I think doing it outside the neutral territory, letting them sniff so there's nothing else that's going to drive them to do anything different. You know, to the one dog that's already been home, there's the motivation of, you know, this is my bed, these are my toys, this is, you know, where I lay down, this is my food, this is my water. It can get ugly sometimes, depending on what that new dog is like. A lot of the times when we rescue a new dog, they're really full of energy. So coming out of a shelter situation, they've been pent up for a while. They might have been there for a week or two and haven't been able to get out much. So now that they're finally out and in a new home, you can kind of get that rocket ship, you know, that I'm free kind of feeling. So the neutral territory, on leash, and just keeping short interactions. Let them sniff each other for 2 or 3 seconds. Pull them apart for a couple minutes. Bring them back together for 2 or 3 seconds. Pull them apart. So we just keep really short, positive interactions.
Okay. So nobody has a bad experience with the other fellas.
Right. That's how we work with difficult dogs. We just keep everything short and positive and just repeat it as many times as we have to, really.
My guest this morning is Ian Grant from Vermont Dog B&B up in Hyde Park, talking about dogs. Open Mic has gone to the dogs today. If you have a question for Ian, please give us a call at 244-1777 or 877-291-8255. You just mentioned shelter dogs again, and I'm thinking about dogs who do come to us from backgrounds that we may not really know much about. You've said several times this morning that dogs actually live in the now. They're not bringing their whole past history consciously into their interactions, but they do have a past history that will have made its mark on them. How should we be dealing with that beyond just observing?
Well, I think it's paying attention to that dogs have a history, but they live more by associations, so to speak. So the association of, you know, let's say a dog got hit by a rolled up newspaper. So it knows that there's something negative coming when they see that newspaper getting rolled up. So, yeah, there's that association, and they can certainly understand that, okay, when I see that, that means I go the other way. So it's paying attention to their behaviors. There's one caller that mentioned earlier is watching their dog during different sounds or noises, something along those lines. And it is paying attention to their behavior to see what kind of nuances there are, what kind of body language changes in their ears and their tail and their eyes, and even, you know, sometimes their breathing changes as well. And, you know, we get a lot of dog owners that know very little, and we get a lot that know quite a bit, too. We get the full array. So
you mean know what their dogs are going through?
They're well aware of it. And the only way they're really well aware of it is because they pay attention to it. They pay attention to when somebody comes through the door. They pay attention to when there's noises. They understand. They're aware of their body language and what changes are made. So, it's just becoming more aware of how they act under different situations.
We're talking to Ian Grant from Vermont Dog B&B. I've got something here. We have a comment actually from Kaya Como. Kaya, come right on in here. Kaya has a question. You have a question for Ian?
I do have a question.
Okay.
So we have an ongoing discussion in our house. The old dog is getting old. And she's blind, so we don't want to introduce a new pup to her. But we're thinking about, you know, a year or two down the road, we're going to get another dog, maybe one, maybe two. If you're going to have a two-dog household, is it best to get the pups together, like from the same litter, or introduce them at the same time in the house? Or can you go with a pup and then maybe 6 months or a year later introduce the second one? What's the best way?
That's a loaded question.
Oh, great. Because we did one where we got one dog in November. 6 months later, we introduce his quote-unquote sister, and there was definitely an alpha male going on. Hated the second dog. Didn't want anything to do with her.
As far as getting puppies, if you're getting them like in the 8 to 10 week range, and the house can handle it, I would get two at the same time. Because they're going to handle each other. They're going to fulfill each other.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Very difficult for, you know, a human to fulfill an eight-week-old puppy.
Shoot, you know, my husband's right then. We've got to get him at the same time.
There's one
That's
for the
okay.
husbands. But to go back to the very first statement you said about you have a blind dog now and you don't want to get...
I don't want to introduce a new dog.
Why not?
Just because she was always the pup that was picked on by the older dog. And she's had a tough life. I feel like she was almost abused. And now that she's in a single house or she's a single dog and she's blind, it's like, I just want to make her comfortable.
Then that's totally up to you. I just wanted to make sure you weren't going to feel sorry about the blind part of it.
No, not at all.
Good. Because dogs don't look at each other. They're all nose first.
Yeah.
So
I mean,
it doesn't
she
matter.
Bumps into the wall and she's fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry.
As far as you feel like she was getting picked on when she was younger, this is where you have to put on your suit of armor for a second.
Yeah.
That falls on you guys.
Okay.
And it truly does, because nobody was sticking up for her.
Right.
Yeah. So that's why she did what she had to do. She was making her decisions that she had to make on her own.
Okay.
So, you know, was her decision just to avoid it or move away from it or to accept it or to really fight back? You know, that's
right.
That's when it's being left up to her. So
okay, so now I'm a bad dog parent. So in the future, when I'm moving forward,
let me ask you a question
my gosh.
About Heidi. How is she? How's Heidi around other dogs now? Does she just avoid them?
Well, we don't socialize her much. She's pretty much stay at home inside. But the few times I bring her to the vets. She's sort of, you know, she knows that the other dog is there, and she'll sort of just crouch between my knees for protection. Somehow she can sense it's a big dog, and she lashes out and snaps because she's got little dog syndrome. And then if it's another dog her size, she's fine.
Are you sure that's not what you're conveying to her? No, it's what she's...
I don't know. Maybe.
Because I...
You're the dog expert.
In my experience, a dog can't smell or can't smell size. So it's all about scent and energy.
Okay.
Right? So now my other question was, why do you think that your dog gets between your legs for protection?
I don't know.
And see, this is the human psychology that
Maybe
comes back
at
it.
Maybe because I pick her up to protect her.
You think?
Which is even worse, by the way, if that makes you feel any better.
Oh, good.
Yeah. You know, it...
Maybe I should just go with cats.
Help this woman.
I will. So as far as taking her to the vets, obviously you want to keep her as safe as possible.
Right.
Right? If she smells another dog, if you see her body language change a little bit, just pull her back towards you.
Okay.
You know, if you see her start to stiffen up or if she starts growling, something like that.
Right.
Bring her back to you. Now, as far as another dog coming to sniff her, again, I'd give them 1 or 2 seconds to sniff her. If they're doing it longer than that, we call that the long handshake, which means it's like if you walk up and meet somebody and you start shaking hands.
Right.
And you keep shaking 5 seconds, 10 seconds, 15 seconds, it's kind of awkward.
creepy. Okay.
Right? So keep it short and sweet. If somebody lets their dog sniff your dog for 2 or 3 seconds and not doing anything, just get up and move across the room.
Oh, okay.
You know, you have an out there, so to speak. That's the kind of stuff that changes your relationship with your dog, because now you're sticking up for her.
Hmm.
And you're helping her feel comfortable.
Okay.
You're not allowing her to kind of get into that phase of feeling uncomfortable over and over and over again.
Huh. Okay.
Make sense?
It does make sense.
We can talk more later.
Back to my original question. Two pups in a house. Introduce them at the same time?
Well, if they're siblings, they're already...
Or if you're getting them at the same time. Oh, if they're... Yeah, okay.
If they're siblings, they've met.
They've met.
Just crate train them. Okay. Just make sure they're crate trained. That's going to save a lot of time and heartache. And as far as crate training, they don't need a condo to live in.
Okay.
They just need a crate big enough for them to stand up, turn around, lay back down, and that's it.
Okay.
And there's always crates for sale on Craigslist and front porch forums and all that kind of stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
All righty.
Good question, though. Great question.
We're talking with Ian Grant from Vermont Dog B&B up in Hyde Park. Jane from South Royalton, you're on the air with Ian. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Jane. You got a question for Ian?
Yes, I do. We have a dog in our family that was a rescue dog from someplace where it had flooded. I'm not sure if it was from the hurricanes or from New Jersey. But the dog cannot be left alone. If you leave her alone just to go put the kids on the bus, she jumps through screens, she breaks out of the house. We've kenneled her. She chews through zip ties. We have to put locks on the kennel when we leave. She's a very strong, muscular dog. She's great around the kids, but she likes to jump. And I kind of feel that, you know, she's been through a trauma, and the doctors don't seem to know how to help them with it, and they give her medication. But it's to the point where, you know, you really hate to go to this one area, one house, and get jumped on, or have them yelling at the dog because she's jumping on you or acting a little crazy. But she's great with the kids. She lets the kids walk all over and everything.
So how old is she?
I think she's about 3.
Okay, and how long have you had her for?
About a year.
And so has this been going on since day one?
Yeah.
That doesn't sound enjoyable.
No.
In this stage of the game, go ahead.
At night, she just kind of like crashes.
Yeah, because she's so exhausted.
So, yeah, she goes off like at 6:30, 7 o'clock to her mat, and she's done.
So are you medicating her now?
Yes.
Are you doing the Prozac?
Yes.
Yeah. At this stage in the game, I'd probably consult a trainer in your area just because it's so drastic. Separation anxiety is very difficult to deal with, obviously, as you know, especially breaking zip ties and breaking out of crates and that type of thing. So I would definitely consult somebody. You know, she's exhausted at the end of the day. And one of the questions I would ask is, you know, if her pupils are dilated for most of the day, this could be a case of she's literally hooked on adrenaline. And some dogs can be basically adrenaline junkies. They know how to trigger it in their body. They know how to release it. And some dogs may not ever come out of that, so to speak, unless they get some training and some techniques to work with. So I would definitely consult somebody in your area, because this is not one of those cases that can be just easily managed in, you know, a day or two. This is really, you know, there's some time that you're going to have to invest in this. You know, do your research. Make sure you find a reputable trainer in your area, maybe that some of your friends have worked with. But, you know, I wish you the best with that. If you were a lot closer, I'd certainly be more than happy to help you out, or if you want to make the trek way up here.
Okay.
But
The dog actually lives in Central Vermont in the Barrie area.
Oh, well, we have a number of customers from this area. So if we can definitely do an evaluation on the dog without a doubt. So, you know, feel free to give us a call and we can...
Yeah, I just feel bad for her, because I just feel that, you know, if it was a child, there would be something they could do for it, you know?
Yeah, and there is something you can definitely do with this dog, and I there's a number of questions I have and that we would have to really delve into and get really in-depth with. So,
okay.
And that's on with our paperwork that comes along with the evaluation, so we can definitely sit down and try to hash things out and come up with a game plan for you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay,
thank
Jane. Thank you so much for the call. We're talking with Ian Grant from Vermont Dog B&B on Open Mic in another 10 minutes if you have a question for Ian. And we'll be back right after these on Open Mic. Good morning. Welcome back to Open Mic. Hester Fuller's my name, and I'm with you every Monday from 9 until 11. Today, my guest is Ian Grant from Vermont Dog B&B up in Hyde Park, Vermont. Ian, before the break, we were talking with Jane from South Royalton, who was describing a dog, which sounds like some pretty serious management issues there. And she mentioned that this is a dog that they'd adopted from a shelter. We were talking earlier about backgrounds of animals that we might want to adopt. And a lot of us want to bring our dogs or get our dogs from shelters because there are a lot of wonderful dogs out there that are looking for homes. If we're going to the shelter with an eye toward finding a new family member, are there questions? Is there a process we should kind of put ourselves through to understand who's coming into our household?
I really think spending as much time with that dog as possible is the big key. I don't think going just once and you know, the dog's so happy to see you and licking your hand and crawling all over and you say, this is a dog for us. Mm-hmm. I think it's going a number of times. And if somebody else gets the dog to me, then so be it. You know, maybe it wasn't the right fit. Mm-hmm. I think going, you know, 4, 5, 6 times and seeing that, because you're going to see that dog, you're going to see different behaviors. You're not going to spend just 5 minutes with it and go, you know, this is it. Mm-hmm. So the more time you spend with the dog, the more you're going to get to know about it or get to know the dog. So and shelters can be tough because they're basically in those kennels every minute of the day, other than times they get to let out to go do their business, or there's a prospective adopter that wants to take the dog out to meet. So that's the other part to keep in mind, is that they're pent up. They have a lot of energy depending on how long they've been there. So it's trying to find a way to see through all the excitement and energy and trying to figure out if that's the right dog for you.
Well, even though the shelter is a particular circumstance that might actually be enhancing the stress the dog feels because they don't get out and running around, how likely is it that when they come home they'd be radically different from what you've seen in the shelter?
I think it would take some serious time in the beginning, especially, you know, coming from the shelter and being so full of energy and excitement. Ideally, the first thing to do with your dog once you get them home is just take a long walk. Mm. You know, once you go for an hour, go for another hour, because they may have been in that shelter for a week, 2 weeks, a month. You know, they just want to get out and expel some of this energy. And, you know, at that point, then you can start seeing what the dog is about. You're not working with excitement. You're working with their personality. Mm-hmm. And from there, you can really start to develop the relationship and work with them and create that structure and rules and boundaries that we mentioned. And, you know, hopefully live a long and happy life from there.
So taking it the way you would take a relationship with a person, really try to understand what you're getting into.
Who would have thunk it?
Who would have thunk it? Imagine that. We're talking with Ian Grant from Vermont Dog B&B, and it's coming up on 11 o'clock, but we have time for one or two more calls. So give us a call if you have a question for Ian about your dog or your relationship with your dog, 244-1777 or 877-291-8255 is our number. A number of our callers have alluded to the use of medication, specifically Prozac, with animals that they were having a difficult time managing. Is there a role for medication in some of these cases?
I think there is. Ideally, when a dog comes to us, I want to see that dog as raw as possible, so to speak. Mm-hmm. I want to see it off medication so I know what I'm dealing with. If they're on medication, then I don't truly know what I'm working with, mm-hmm. or what we're dealing with or how severe the case may be. So seeing them off medication to me is ideal. We've never suggested a dog go on medication. We've had customers that do it. I'd like to think there'd be a world without it for dogs, mm-hmm. other than just normal aches and pains and you know, getting old and going mm-hmm. through disease and that kind of thing. For medication, but
not these psychoactive medications.
I'm not a big fan of it, and if you put 10 trainers in this room, there might be 10 different answers that you got. So everybody's going to be different with it. I've seen dogs on medication that have done well. I'd still like to take my shot on working with that dog just to see, you know, how far you can get. So to each his own, and at the end of the day, it's your own dog, and what you decide to do is what you think is best. So. Mm-hmm.
Speaking with Ian Grant from Vermont Dog B&B up in Hyde Park, Vermont. That's been our topic all morning long. We're coming down to the end, though, Ian. I was wondering if there's any particularly memorable critter that leaps to mind when you think about dogs you've worked with over the years that you've been doing Vermont Dog B&B? Is there anybody that stands out in your mind as someone you won't forget easily?
Probably towards the beginning of my career, you know, once you start working with the bigger, the stronger, the more powerful dogs, it can be a little intimidating going in for a consultation in somebody's home. And I got called in for a Mastiff, and he's at least 120, 130 pounds.
Yikes.
Had bitten the 12-year-old daughter, 13-year-old daughter, had bitten the wife, just pretty much everybody but the husband. And so I got to their home. I walked in, they said, this is their dog, and he just walked up, and normally a dog will smell you and kind of walk around you. He walked up and put his nose right against my leg, and that was his greeting of me. And to say it was a little intimidating, that was probably in the beginning, in the early parts of my career, so to speak, that was one of the most uneasy moments when a big animal does that to you.
I can imagine. A nose, but not teeth.
Yeah, and there was just no effort in sniffing. He just leaned himself up against me.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, I would remember that as well.
Yes, vividly.
I've been talking with Ian Grant from Vermont Dog B&B. Ian, I want to let you give folks your phone number. If folks still have questions that they would like addressed, they can call and speak to you or speak to one of the other incredibly competent trainers that you have up there, Serena Russell and Chelsea Patinode. Where can they call?
They can reach us at 802-851-8375.
Okay.
And also on our website, we just revamped here a few weeks ago. We're very happy with Vermont Dog, VTDogBNB.com.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for being here. We're going to have you back again. Those of you up at WLVB and who listen to WLVB, yes, indeed, this is Ian, and he'll be there a little bit later on this morning as well to do his usual weekly slot there. You are tuned to WDEV AM 550, Waterbury, Vermont. And broadcasting also from Warren, Vermont at 96.1, 96.5 FM in Barrie, and 101.9 FM at Island Pond. My name is Hester Fuller. Thank you very much for listening. Mike Smith will be back in this chair tomorrow. Have a Merry Christmas. We'll see you on the other side.